Country Life on Midlands 103. Brought to you by W. Orshaw, Burlington Business Park, Tullamore. Supplier of New Holland tractors in the Midlands. WORshaw.ie.
Now, good evening and welcome to Country Life here on Midlands 103. It's MJ Cleary with you for the next hour, bringing you the latest from the Midlands and further afield from the worlds of agriculture, food and agribusiness. Now, 7:05, and thank you all for joining me this evening. Welcome to the programme. A great week since I was speaking to you all last. Super drying looks a little unsettled over the next few days, but high pressure over the weekend and a return to fine weather early next week is what's on the cards. It is the 15th of February, only 2 weeks left in February, and we'll get to that hallowed ground of the 1st of March. Definitively a great stretch in the evening. Every week now, really noticeable. Notice this evening driving down here to the programme, 6 o'clock, fully bright, and it is exactly what we want. A little mention to everybody working hard at the moment, lambing and calving. Not easy with long nights, plenty of hardships. So if you're listening on the tractor, the calving or the lambing shed or the dairy parlour, hopefully I'll keep you company now for the next hour or so. On to this evening's programme, and a leash farmer won an award at the Tirlan Grain Awards on Monday night. James Mulhall from Emo won an award for his oilseed rape. I'll be speaking to James later. It's a special variety he grows called Here Oilseed Rape. I hadn't heard of it myself. It goes into the production of engine oil, and it's a real story of sustainability. On the topic of sustainability, the use of anaerobic digesters has been a topic for conversation over the last while. Obviously they're used for producing energy, and it's something we're hearing a lot about. The government have committed to them to reduce greenhouse gases, but where will they be and how will they work? Stephen Robb from the Irish Farmers Journal will join me later to chat about this area, and also how a UK company are planning on rolling out mobile anaerobic digesters and what this will mean for farmers on the ground. How will they be fed, and can there be some money made from them? Water quality is something that all farmers have to be very cognizant of, and there are meetings occurring throughout the Midlands where water courses are not meeting their requirements. David Webster from Chagas Mullingar will join me later to speak about these meetings and what farmers can do to improve water quality in their catchment areas. Now, as always, text the show with comments, thoughts or questions to 083 3010 103. And to start this evening's programme, I'll be speaking to Jonathan Murray from South Offaly Ploughing in a moment. They have their event this weekend. But in advance of that, just a few little news stories that caught my eye this week. Sometimes I run out of time on these, and I want to just bring them to your attention. The first one is that of acres. A lot of anxious farmers out there, a lot of you are anxious, wondering, will you be brought into the acres scheme this year? So we are meant to have news by mid-February. Well, just if the government are listening, or the minister, it is mid-February. So this week we are meant to be getting word on exactly what is happening. So over 46,000 farmers applied for acres. The thought was about 30,000 were going to apply, but up to 46,000. So a lot of pressure on the government at the moment now to do something for the farmers who may be left out of the scheme. Funding isn't available for 46,000, so we'll have to wait and see, and you should be hearing this week. Also, fertiliser prices are set to remain high this spring, so there seems to be no respite at the moment, and we're still up at crazy high prices in relation to fertiliser, 18,612 and around 850, 900, little touch with it in places. And it looks like that's where it's going to stay for the time being. A lot of farmers are holding their powder, waiting to see if it will come down. But at the moment, not looking like there's anything on the cards. In relation to prices, Lakeland Dairies and Kerry have cut their January milk price down by 6 cent a litre. And Lakeland say there will be significant milk price correction in the coming months. Not what people want to hear, but that is what they're saying. I'm going to try and have an interview with the CEO of Lakelands in the next couple of weeks, an Offaly man, and has been appointed from the start of this year. Also, in relation to calf prices, we're going to do a little piece maybe next week with Declan Maron from the Irish Farmers Journal, but a few prices from Bandon this week. A 5-week-old Frisian bull calf, 71 kilos, made €115, which is... Look, it's a good price is what I'd say for them. Now, 71 kilos, look, you're trying to get a calf up to 100 to get it reared. Strong calves is what I'd say. Back down a little bit then. Angus bulls, 2 weeks old at 50 kilos. Light calves, they made €190. And 2 week old Angus heifers made €125. They're 50 kilos as well. So look, they have a long way to go to be reared. Also, a piece of news from County Laois. €420 an acre was paid for land in Stradbally. and that was 156 acres. So that comes in at an annual amount of €65,486 per annum, just under €65,500 per year. No entitlements on that land, and it was let for 5 years. Now, I know people may think that that is all tax-free. However, there are limits for tax-free amounts. For 5 year leasing, 5 to 7 year, that tax free limit is 18,000. So that really goes well in advance of that. If you go 7 to 10 years, then you're talking 22,500. And north of 10 years is 30,000. The way the land leasing is going at the moment, those tax free brackets are getting eroded very, very quickly. And so people just need to be cognizant of that. Also, just in case they think that those figures are limitless, they are not. Now, as I said, I'm going to move on with the South Offaly ploughing has taken place this weekend, and I have Jonathan Murray from the organisation on the line. Jonathan, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ.
So, Jonathan, you're on Sunday. Can you just tell us what is on offer for people, please?
Yeah, so basically we're hosting our annual plough match this Sunday. We're in Killeen, or literally just half a mile from the cross or the pub in Killeen, which would be the landmark known to most people. It's our annual ploughing match. We'll have about 10 or 12 ploughing classes on the day. And listening to your introduction earlier on, I think the weather's going to be on our side.
Yeah, no, it looks like it's going to be, Jonathan. There's also a kind of a significance in relation to your location this year. It's Killeen, as we know, very close, County Offaly, very close to Rath, where the ploughing championship was a number of years ago. And that's where the South Offaly ploughing organisation was born from. So you're having a special birthday celebration this year, Jonathan.
Yeah, it's our 25th ploughing match, MJ. Our club was formed in November of 96. All-Ireland was coming to Rath in 97. There was a lot of excitement. There was a bit of interest in competition ploughing. And I suppose the late Harry Gunning and a few more locals got together and formed the organisation in November 96, and they held their first plough match in Rath on Declan Egan's land that year in February 97. It was probably most memorable for the weather. It was a horrendous day, the very first plough match we had, but and the spirits was high, and we rallied on, and we unfortunately missed 2 years due to COVID, so we should have been having our 25th 2 years ago, but this year's our 25th match.
Yeah, very good, Jonathan. For people who were there, they're probably thinking back like it was yesterday. Unfortunately, time goes very quickly, as we know. For the ploughing in general, Jonathan, we often talk about it, machinery, ploughing, farming, older demographic involved in it all. In relation to getting younger people involved, I know you have different classes. What's the interest like with the younger people for ploughing?
Yeah, look, there is, I suppose, it can be a challenge sometimes to draw younger people into different sectors of agriculture, but to be fair, at national ploughing level, they're working very hard to get the youth involved in that. I suppose up to a number of years ago, we always had 5 ploughing matches in Offaly. The last couple of years, we now have 6, the 6th one being solely a novice match, with focusing on bringing in young people. And it's only novices that plough on that day, and that gives us more seasoned guys the opportunity to say, let them use our equipment, and we're available to coach them and get them going on the day. And whoever wins that novice ploughing match goes ahead in to compete in. There's now a novice class at All-Ireland level, and we actually had one, an Offaly man, young John Bracken, won the novice reversible class at last year's All-Ireland.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And that specifically novice class, that's taking place shortly, Jonathan, I believe.
That is taking place Sunday week, so the Sunday after our own match, Offaly is hosting their novice ploughing match, and it'll be just down at Harvey in Tullamore.
Yeah.
So if there's any young listeners out there think they're up for the challenge, get in touch with us.
Yeah, very good. And John, just a word on your day job before you go. People will know you from being involved in the ploughing, but you're also working with Temple Tuohy Farm Machinery, and well known over there with premises in Emo and Leash. I have an Emo man on later on in the programme. Well known for your John Deere's. How has business been over the past year, for example, 2022? I know a lot of sectors of agriculture did reasonably well. Have farmers been spending as usual?
Yeah, no, 2022, business is good. I suppose things got very busy probably in the back of COVID, where guys couldn't go on holidays and couldn't do this, that and the other. And it really got busy from then on. Business is good. There's lots of demand out there. I heard you saying in your introduction, we're talking about AD plants. We're talking about guys making engine oil out of oilseed rape. it's an ever-changing industry. At the moment, we're seeing lots of demand for equipment, so business is good. And this year, I suppose, is a special year for TFM in that we're 40 years John Deere dealers this year, so we'll be having some events during the year to mark that.
And the interesting area, or the area which people have interest in, I should say, is that of prices. John, we're looking at inflation regularly at the moment. We know tractor prices have gone up in the lines of parts, tractors in general. Is that increase in price putting people off, would you say? Or are you noticing parts in particular being just a lot more expensive than they were?
Stuff is more expensive than it was. I think if you're broke down in the field with a tractor, your priority is availability. Mm. And I suppose that's maybe what got TFM to where they are today, in that we always have the stuff available, or we can get it in a very short timeline. And that has something probably in the back of COVID that other manufacturers have possibly suffered a bit with. And most guys these days just can't afford to be broke down.
Yeah,
the weather, again, the time there. But yeah, we'll appreciate the stuff has got dear. Parts have got dear, machinery has got dear.
It's a good point, Jonathan. As you said, people, regardless of whether you're a contractor or farmer, people just can't afford to be broke down. It's not like it was years and years ago, and it is a very good point. Jonathan, I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to say many thanks for joining me this evening. Your South Offaly's on this weekend, Sunday, and then the Offaly Novice is the following week. South Offaly's in Killine, and the Offaly Novice then Anna Harvey, Tullamore, and hopefully you get good weather for both days. Jonathan, many thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Jonathan Murray there from South Offaly Ploughing. And as Jonathan was saying, his day job there is Temple Tuohy Farm Machinery, well-known John Deere dealers throughout the country. As we said, premises over in Laois. And 40 years dealing with John Deere's. It's a long time. The 25 years since the start of the South Offaly is a long time as well. But as I was saying, people involved in it probably don't think it is a long time. As we well know, it doesn't belong travelling by. Now, we're moving on to the topic of anaerobic digesters. And we have Stephen Robb on the line from the Irish Farmers Journal. Stephen, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thanks, MJ. Good to be here.
Very good, Stephen, and welcome to the programme. We'll start, Stephen, with just a basic on this first before we get into it, and that is for people who are listening who have heard about anaerobic digesters but really scratch their head and don't know what they are. An idiot's guide, if you will, for us all, myself included, because I wouldn't be overly up on this area either, Stephen. What exactly are they and what do they do?
Well, look, anaerobic digestion, or AD for short, it's actually a really simple technology, and it's widespread across Europe for upwards of 30 years now. It's a completely natural process, MJ, whereby organic material such as slurry, grass, crops, food waste, you name it, is broken down by naturally occurring microorganisms in the absence of oxygen. And what happens is these microorganisms break down the material, break down the organic material, and release biogas. And biogas is roughly about 55% methane and about 40% to 45% CO2. Now, this is a natural process, but it can be controlled, and it can be controlled in what's called an anaerobic digestion plant. Basically, an anaerobic digestion plant is just a large sealed heated tank. It can be placed on a farm, it can be placed in an industrial state, it can be placed in a town or a city. And basically you feed the plant the same as you would a cow as such, with this organic material, and you let the bugs go to work, and then you can capture that biogas. And once you capture that biogas, there are a number of options, a number of different uses you can do with it across Europe. And in some places in Ireland, you can burn the biogas through a combined heat and power plant, so basically just a big engine, and that creates electricity, which can be exported to the grid. But really what Ireland's trying to do, and what Ireland wants us to do, is to take that biogas and go a step further, and basically you remove the CO2 and increase that methane content to about 99%. So in other words, you purify the biogas, and once it's purified, you get a product called biomethane. And biomethane, MJ, is practically chemically identical to natural gas that you would find in the natural gas pipeline, except that it's renewable and carbon neutral.
Very good, Stephen. Excellently explained, I have to say. So that's grand. We understand the science behind it. I suppose the next question is, do we have any of these plants going at the moment here in the Republic of Ireland?
We do, but on a very, very limited scale. ballpark, there's about 30. Off those 30, this is the Republic of Ireland now, off those 30 plants, about 10 of them are farm-based anaerobic digestion plants. They're relatively small in scale compared to other parts of Europe. And the vast majority of those plants were funded through a government scheme that was closed in 2017 called REFIT, the Renewable Energy Feed-in Tariff. And basically it was a support scheme to allow AD plants to produce this biogas and burn it through CHP and produce electricity. The uptake of that scheme was very low because the economics weren't overly attractive. That's why there's only a handful of these plants. You know, only a handful of operators could really make it work for various reasons. But on the island of Ireland, that's a different story. You cross the border, you go to Northern Ireland, there's about 90 farm-based AD plants in operation, all doing the same thing, all producing biogas, burning it through a CHP, and producing electricity to export to the grid. The difference is they had a really generous support scheme in place, which really encouraged farmers to develop their own AD plants. It's been an unrivaled success in Northern Ireland, and most of the plants are still operating today across Europe. It's much the same situation. There's been numerous support schemes in various countries across Europe, and that's how the AD industry has got up and running in all of those countries. There are about 20,000 AD plants in operation across Europe as we speak.
And say in Northern Ireland, Stephen, just up the road, we're, as you say, on the island of Ireland, these farm-based, it's about 90 farm-based AD plants. Give us a little feeling of what exactly we're talking about. Are these huge, large-scale farms? Are they smaller farms? Are they a couple of farmers after co-opting together and running one of these? How are they working, the logistics of them?
Yeah, it is mixed. You do have that situation whereby you would have a number of farmers coming together to operate them. But look, by and large, you would have single operators, single farmers running these plants. Now, the vast majority of plants in Northern Ireland is what we call a 500 kilowatt AD plant. So basically, it's generating roughly about 500 kilowatts of electricity. Ballpark, you would need about 500 acres of land to So 500 acres of land, it's a lot of ground, but it is achievable for a lot of single farmers up in Northern Ireland and elsewhere, I'm sure, to gather up that amount of ground and grow the grass or grow the hybrid rye that would be needed to feed those plants. The emerging model or the evolving model for Ireland now, the next stage of development, really the rollout of AD on a large scale in Ireland is going to be completely different and it's going to be considerably larger in scale.
Yeah, so what's the government's plan, Stephen? It's obviously not these farm-based ones. Are they planning on building 8 or 10 of these units and then farmers are going to draw silage or slurry or whatever the case may be to them?
Well, I mean, the actual model as to how this is going to work and how it's going to be rolled out across Ireland, it's still anyone's guess, really, because it hasn't happened yet and we're just really in the early stages. So the government has set a target for basically about 200 large-scale AD plants to be developed in Ireland by 2030. They didn't specifically say they want 200 AD plants. They said they want 5.7 terawatt hours worth of biomethane to be produced by AD plants by 2030. And that's about 10% of Ireland's natural gas demand met by biomethane. So you work that back, you would need 200 relatively large AD plants. In fact, by my calculations, what we would class as a normal AD plant or standard AD plant now in Ireland is going to be about 3, possibly 4 times larger than a normal AD plant in Northern Ireland. And that's just because we have to go that step further. We're not burning the gas through a CHP to make electricity. We're taking the gas and we're upgrading it to biomethane. And that requires a number of extra steps, which all requires different equipment, which requires more investment. So in other words, you need to be able to avail economies of scale to develop a modern AD biomethane plant. At least that's what we thought until a new operator launched in Ireland last week. And they could potentially shake up the Irish market before the Irish market has even developed.
Yeah, well, we'll speak about those now, Stephen, in just one moment. But the government plan of those, if we talk about the 200 large-scale ones by 2030, realistically, it is completely pie in the sky. We're 2023 now, you know, no planning permission gone in, no sites, building work to get them up and running. Like, it's definitively not going to happen. Like, is that fair to say?
That is entirely fair to say, yeah. It is definitively not going to happen. Look, I would be talking to a lot of developers in this role of mine in the journal, and all of them will say it takes from project conception, from the first time that you have that idea for a project to getting shovels in the ground, you're really chatting 4 to 5 years. Mm. That's the process for getting the project together, for getting the business case together, for getting the farmers, the land, and then the planning. The planning is proven to be an absolute juggernaut to overcome. For any developer who's trying to get a plan through planning at the moment. But even if you manage to do that, MJ, like the economics of a large-scale plant, the economics of any plant in Ireland at the moment, still don't really stack up, and that's because there isn't a support scheme in place, and pretty much every other country across Europe, if not the world, has a support scheme in place. So I think what's happening is that you see developers trying to and it is happening. There are developers proceeding with projects and getting the projects through planning as we speak. And I think once they have planning secured in those projects, they're probably going to sit tight until the government announces some kind of an incentive scheme to actually make it viable to develop these plants. But you're right, MJ, it's high in the sky stuff to expect this to happen before 2030.
And
maybe 2040?
Yeah, well, I was going to say this, if you have to change to 3 to 4, probably more like it. But look, it's nothing but like the government to come up with these figures and just, I don't know, it's like all these carbon figures, you know what I mean? You have to scratch your head and wonder at times. But this UK-based company then, this English company, are thinking of coming in and shaking it up. What are they planning on doing, in a word, Stephen?
Yeah, look, there's actually a lot of companies looking at the Irish market for potential AD development. And that's because Ireland was identified by the European Commission as having the highest potential biomethane generation potential, I should say, out of any European country. And that's just because of our agricultural feedstock and agricultural industry and whatnot. So this latest company, it's called Circle O, there after launching an Irish office last week. And basically what they want to do is they want to develops what they class as small to medium scale modular AD plants right across Ireland. So their whole pitch is that they're not going after the large scale plants. Instead, they will develop smaller scale plants, so similar in size to what would be in operation in Northern Ireland, and that they can do it, you know, off grid or on grid, or they can do it in a remote area, whereby other developers might not be able to successfully develop a plant. So they have big plans for Ireland, and look, we'll wait and see if they actually come to fruition.
Yeah, it's kind of watch this space. Stephen, I have to say many thanks there. Great rundown on the whole area, and look, no doubt it's something we'll be chatting to you about in the future. It's definitely a growth area, and I'm going to say many thanks for joining me this evening, Stephen.
No problem, MJ.
Stephen Robb there from the Irish Farmers Journal, and a rundown on the entire area of anaerobic digestion. Very, very interesting. But again, yeah, these figures put up about the amount that's going to happen by 2030. So as Stephen said, look, it is pie in the sky stuff. Be interesting to see what happens with that UK company. But also, the silage is very expensive stuff at the moment, and the way the dairy industry is going, hard to see someone reducing cow numbers in order to feed an anaerobic digester when milk is currently where it's at. And at the end of the day, that's what's dictating the land market. So where will the silage come from? Another slurry to be put into these as well, but dairy slurry is not great. It's very watery, it doesn't really have the same energy content, so if the stock numbers are decreased, the slurry won't be good enough. And also the appetite for land with the nitrate question at the moment does lead you to scratch your head a little bit as to where the grass or the silage will come from for these. But it is something that we're all going to be part of going forward, and it'll be something that'll be interesting to keep an eye on, no question about it. Now we're moving on to water quality, and we have David Webster from Chagas Mullingar on the line. David, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Thank you very much, MJ. Thank you.
You're more than welcome, David. So look, water quality is something we're all very aware of. It's something that's in the press a lot more and more in the last period of time. On a broad scale question, David, how are we faring out at the moment as far as farmers in Ireland in relation to water quality?
Water quality is not doing so well at the moment. We're about half our waters are at good quality. And in the last 10 years or so, unfortunately, there's been a decline in that. So we need to reverse the trend around and get things good, because all waters by 2027, which is just around the corner, the target is to have them all at good standard. So there's a lot of work there to improve the quality of our waters nationally.
And is this as a result, David, of just increased stock numbers in relation to excess nitrogen, slurry and whatnot, or is it as simple as that?
I wouldn't put it down to increased stock numbers as per se. A lot of it would be down to how we manage our slurries and how we apply our fertilisers, taking that, you know, we just take the issue of the nitrates at the moment. A lot of that, when we apply nitrogen, be it chemical or in the form of slurry, if the plant isn't actively growing, well, then that nitrate that is in the chemical or the slurry form, if it's not taken up by the plant, it will be lost to the environment. So from a farmer's point of view, applying nutrients when there isn't active growth, it's a lose-lose for the farmer. So what we should be doing is, you know, applying our fertilizers at the right rate and at the right time and at the right location, so that it's a win-win for everyone. You know, so this is a very positive story that farmers can you know, improve their use of their fertilizers, improving their efficiencies, and also have a win for the environment as well.
So the old mantra, David, of maybe, look, weather is good there at the moment, 15th of February, farmers going with maybe half a bag of urea on grazing ground at the moment. It's a no-no, really, is it?
Well, take it into account here, 15th of February now, soil temperatures have just arrived at 6 degrees, so this is, you know, when grass begins to grow. But what we need to do is look at the forecast for the next 24, 48 hours, and even so, even into the, you know, following 4 or 5 days. Now, we know there's rain forecast in the next 48 hours. So, look, we need to hold off till that rain has passed to prevent any leaching. And then look at the forecast again. And then if it's going to get warmer and soil temperatures are still remaining at 6 and rising, well, then we go and apply our slurry or chemical nitrogen, so that it's taken up all the time when the plant is actively growing.
Yeah, and as you said at the outset, and it is, look, it's good advice, David, as you said, look, nobody wants to be spreading fertiliser or slurry when the grass can't take it and the grass won't grow, because that's the aim of the game at the end of the day. But when we did mention at the start, I said, look, is it as simple as reducing stock? We see front page news, 30% stock reduction needed in Ireland. But if you look at the large-scale farmers, for example, let's go and look at a large-scale dairy farmer, someone milking 200, 250 cows. He or she is probably doing things very right, probably in derogation, has slurry storage ample, has everything, no spillage off the yard and whatnot. Are they really at fault, or is it maybe the lowlier stocked farmer who mightn't have his or her finger on the pulse?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't be targeting any derogation farmer or anyone of that intensity. What it really boils down to is how an individual farmer, irrespective of stocking rate, manages their farm. So good practice is to take soil samples and adhere to those, apply lime where necessary and up to P and K where necessary. And if you do that simple thing by taking the soil samples you're going to improve how your fertilizers your fertilizer efficiency from those immensely. So, you know, blaming the higher stocking rate farm, I'd be very slow to bring that to target there.
Yeah,
but
which is good to hear, David, because you know there is a bit of a brush of you know that the higher stocked farmer is at fault for this, but in reality, it's not the case. Like,
I'm not finding this, you know, what we're finding in the PA, it's a mixed bag. It's a bit of everything. and that. But there's a lot of things that, you know, farmers can do to turn this around relatively quickly. So it is by adopting best practice. And if we just look at the simple what's come out in the nitrate changes for this year, which I think a lot of farmers need to be made aware of. If you're farming over the 130 kilos per hectare, you must have soil samples for all your farm this year. If you're growing any amount of tillage, be it an acre or whatever you're growing, you must have a soil sample for those as well. Anyone over 150 kilos have to apply their slurries using the trailing shoe, the less methods. Buffer zones for when you're applying chemical fertilizer to all farmers, or to when you're applying chemical fertilizer to land, if you can't spread within 3 meters of any drain, that's an increase of a meter. So these little things that are all coming in, that farmers need to be aware of, and of the changes. So the big one is the soil sampling for this year. Now, it's good practice for all farmers to have soil samples anyway, but this is a mandatory requirement for anyone over the 130 kilos. And in the absence of a soil sample, they won't be allowed any chemical P whatsoever. So if they went and bought a half a ton of 18-6-12, as little as that, you know, they've breached their limits, and they'll have a cross-compliance problem then later on down the road, especially with when the fertilizer database comes to through later on in the year.
Yeah, and it is really important getting that message out. One other question I have for you, David, and it's one we're asked here regularly on the programme, and it's the area of the nitrates and the derogation. We know it's 250 at the moment, and it's been renegotiated and up and down, and I'm asking people every week on it. It's being mooted. It's going to be moved from 250 down to 220, but then the other side of the argument is that's going to be in specific areas or in specific locations. I don't know if you have a definitive answer on it, but what's your own thought process on it? Are we coming down to that 220? Is it going to be widespread? Is it going to be in certain places?
Yeah, nothing has been decided by the EPA or by the Department of Agriculture yet. What will determine the outcome is the water quality results for 2022 when they're issued from the EPA, and what's the way the derogation will lie then is if there's an increase in nitrates in the waters in the last 2 years. Then that catchment is proposed to go back to 220. So realistically, nationally, you're looking at, you know, all the southeast there. That's where the major increases have come through, and then the rest of the country is rising phosphorus. So look, it's looking like that the 220 will probably become a reality.
Hard to see it not at that, David. And finally, talking on water quality, it's a specific area in County Offaly, only up the road from me. It's in it's Clareen, and you have a little information evening tomorrow evening in Ahancon Hall for farmers in that catchment, just on the water quality in that area. Can you just give a little piece of detail on that, please, David?
Yes, Clareen is one of the public areas for action that I'm working on in. And tomorrow evening, Dr. Owen McAleer from LawPro will be discussing the findings that they found, the issues that have been found in the catchment, and it's predominantly a rising nitrates issue. And then myself will be given a talk on how to address these measures and how we can improve water quality and have good farming practices adopted, and without, you know, reductions in stock, as you were hinting earlier on, or anything like that, by adopting good practice.
Absolutely.
And that we can all maintain and go on about our business.
And what time is that tomorrow evening, David?
That's tomorrow evening at 7:30, and all farmers in the catchment are welcome. And if anyone else wants to come as well, they're more than welcome as well.
Lovely stuff. Many thanks for joining me this evening, David.
Okay, thank you very much, MJ. Thank you.
David Webster there, Chagas Mullingar, and that event is tomorrow evening. It's in Aachen Conn Hall. If you're in the catchment, you're going to know where it is. Townland Clarine, not too far from Kennedy, not too far from Burr, just up the road from me. And that's where farmers are going to be going tomorrow evening in relation to water quality. The three real messages there on the water quality, I think, is the good farming practices, and there are lots of headlines out there about reduction of stock numbers needed. Look, you heard it from the horse's mouth there. Reduction in stock numbers are not needed, just good farming practices and just being wary of what you're doing. Also, just knowing those three rules now for 2022. I'm on about them for the last 3 weeks here, 4 weeks, but I just know they're going over the heads of farmers. If you are stocked over 130 kilos of nitrogen per hectare, get your soil samples done. They need to be done, or else you can't spread bagged pea this year. If you're over 150, you have to use the less slurry spreading method. And lastly, buffer zones. If you're near a drain, you have to stay out 3 metres, which makes sense as well. You don't want to be putting you won't be going in too close. You're going to be wasting fertiliser. It's far too expensive. So you stay out 3 metres, and they're the three rules that you need to be cognizant of. Now we're moving on to tillage, and I have leash farmer James Mulhall on the line. James, many thanks for taking my call this evening.
Good evening, MJ. How are you?
We're good, James. And you're a happy man. You won an award on Monday night at the Tierlawn Awards. So there's a lot of people up for it. So it shows you're doing things very right. So I have to say congratulations and well done. We'll start by... very well done, I have to say. I think there's over 1,000 people involved in this, and not many won awards. So it does show that the standard was very high. Let's start off, James, by finding out a little bit about your farm and your enterprise. What is your tillage operation, please?
Well, our tillage operation, many crops on the farm. So we've winter barley, winter wheat, spring barley, gluten-free oats. We grow some fodder beet, and then the oilseed.
Yeah, very good. So you're busy. You're kept going. And there's no question about that. You're in a part of the world over there, James, Emo County Leash, where you have great tillage ground over there. It's a fantastic tract of land.
Yes, it's good. The land is good. I have to say. Yeah, some people describe it as trophy land, and maybe this is why.
Yeah, well, I was speaking to you earlier on, and we were speaking, you have like Vimo Court there. These places were never built in areas of bad land, something similar to over North Tip as well. Burren North Tip would have a great tract of land. You'd have a lot of these old houses on it as well, and at the time they had the pick, so it's always a good sign. The award you won the other night, David, is for your oilseed rape, and I hadn't heard of this before. Can you tell us what type or what variety of oilseed rape it is, please?
Well, the variety of oilseed we're growing is for Tierlawn. This particular variety is grown for the lubrication market, as in engine oils and in many industries. It's processed in Scotland. It's a high uric acid oilseed, and Tierlawn took it on. This is our second year growing it, so they took it on in 21, and it goes to Scotland to be processed. So there would be plenty of normal oilseed rape grown in the country, but this was just the new opportunity that Tierlawn are paying a premium on to intensify farmers to grow it.
And it's called here oilseed rape, is that correct?
Yes, that's the correct term, yeah.
And you're 2 years into it now, James, so just versus a standard crop of oilseed rape, is it more challenging to grow? Does it need more inputs? How are you finding yields, etc.?
Well, I suppose the big thought we had on it was, will it yield compared to ordinary oilseed rape? But so far we have found that it's every bit as good. We've had yields this year of 2.3 tonnes, which is exceptional. Like you'd be aiming for 2 tonne when you plant the crop, but the crop does have its elements of risk. I suppose harvest time is your biggest risk when the crop is ready to be harvested. And I suppose when you plant it to get the crop established is also your other risk. So, you know, weather can play a big part at harvest time. If you got storms or wind or anything like that when it's ready to be harvested, you could have high losses. So that's the risk with the crop. But the last 2 years we've got on very well, and obviously 22 has been a great year for all crops, but to win the award and get recognition, we're delighted with it.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, James. As you were saying about the potential losses, you were explaining to me on the oilseed rape, on the crop. I'm not familiar with it, and you were telling me how small the actual seed is when you're harvesting. It's tiny. It's almost like a turnip seed. And my question was, how do you stop losses? And you've changed your combine around a little bit to ensure that those losses are kept to a minimum. Can you explain that to us, please?
Yeah, in 2021, we decided to change the combine. So we went for a Class Lexion, and Class have what they call a Vario header, which people who are familiar with combines would know the cutter bar on the front is in a position so you can extend out the cutter bar to harvest your oilseed. And like when the knife is cutting through the crop, it's shaking like a tree, and you would have losses there at that point. So the header is extended more, and losses are minimal then. So I do believe that this is helping us achieve higher yields. And also, we've had good support from Kelly Zabaris with the combine, and it was set up very, very well. There's just certain settings you would have to change, like fan speed and things for your oilseed, and closing down certain things because the seeds are so small. But it has worked, and I do believe that the header is adding to our particular yields anyway.
Yeah, and on the money side of it then, James, how's this crop stacking up in relation to standard oilseed rape? You're making more from it, I'm presuming.
Yeah, well, Tierland pay a premium of €40 or more, sometimes €40 to €50, depending on the year, and it gives you that bit more security before you plant the crop. So, like, you're on the world market then, you can sell. It's making anywhere from €600 previously to €800, so whenever you decide to sell. So it is stacking up. The biggest thing as well with the reason why we decided to grow it is it is a break crop in your rotation, so it gives you an opportunity to get in with first wheat or an opportunity to grow gluten-free oats, so you can get into other premium crops from sowing this in your land. And it's super beneficial to the land, like, you know, it's better than just growing cereals. You're actually cleansing your soil, like, and putting organic matter back in. We chop the stalks and let them back in, and that has been supported in again with the strong cooperation measures. We were getting €65 per acre to in the strong cooperation measure per acre to let the material back into the ground, but we've seen huge benefits in following in the next crop also.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that, James, from someone who definitively knows what they're talking about. 2023 then, going forward, James, have you a positive outlook for tillage for the year?
I have a very positive outlook for tillage. Crops, I suppose, winter crops have got off to, it's been a more difficult year with all the rainfall we had from October on. We had a lot of rainfall, so crops are getting it hard to get established. But just with the range of crops now and companies like Tierland supporting farmers, the range of opportunities, like just when we were presented with our awards, we got shown the research and development down in Ballyragget, and it's just amazing the potential that's there for all tillage farming in this country. Gluten-free oats, there seems to be massive what they're able to use the product for, and it just the outlook is wonderful for tillage farming, and also, like, growing oilseed is taking carbon out of the sky. It's something that is not mentioned, and all the bees come to it when the crop is flowering, and it's helping. When you hear the word climate change mentioned so often now, like these crops are helping reduce climate change and that, like, and it's not often spoke of, you know.
No, 100%, James. Look, on that, I'm going to say many thanks for joining me. I must say, I really enjoyed chatting to you there, James, and no doubt I'll be talking to you in the future. A very positive outlook, as you say, for tillage going forward. Many thanks, James.
Thanks, MJ. Thank you.
James Mulhall there from Emo in County Laois, and a man who really knows what he's talking about, no question about that. A motivated young tillage farmer there, and very positive about the future. Great to hear. Many thanks to James for joining me. Thanks to David Webster from Chagas, Stephen Robb from the Irish Farmers Journal, and Jonathan Murray from South Offaly Ploughing. Show's repeated on Sunday morning at 7 a.m. through to 8 a.m. I'll be back with you this time next week, as always. You can get us on podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts. We pop up about a day or two after the show goes out here, and you can listen at your convenience. And we will talk to you in 7 days' time. So stay safe for the week. And if you're calving or farm or lambing or whatnot, I know you're busy at the moment. So trying to ensure you're getting adequate rest. And we'll talk to you in 7 days' time.